Are you an entrepreneur looking for more free time, more money, or just looking for that success blueprint? The Proven Entrepreneur is the podcast for you. Host Don Williams and his guests share real success stories from proven entrepreneurs. Here's your host, Don Williams.
Hey, Don Williams here with today's episode of the Proven Entrepreneur Show. What a treat. I have a phenomenal guest with us today, Dr. Thaddeus Galla. And Doc, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Don. I'm looking forward to this.
Man, I'm so thrilled. So you are a recovering doctor, meaning I don't think you practice anymore or rarely. And you're a thought leader and a speaker. And so I don't forget, you have an event coming up on a beautiful island in an unbelievably beautiful blue sea with some A-listers. And I don't want to drop any names. Oh, yeah, I will. Like Gary Vaynerchuk's going to be there. Dr. Thaddeus Galla is going to be there. Tell us a little bit about your upcoming event.
Yeah, so it's the Guardians Annual Retreat. And what we do is we gather every year in beautiful Puerto Rico, right on the Caribbean. We reserve an entire resort that looks out over the Caribbean. You know, then the backdrop is this lush rainforest mountains. So we have an amazing, amazing location. And we know that research shows that when you're safe, when you're warm, and when you're relaxed, that's where you typically do the best thinking. That's where you're the most creative. And that's where the magic happens. So that's why we intentionally do this. So it's warm, safe, and relaxed. And we bring in these amazing speakers to help people and entrepreneurs collapse time so they really can take the elevator versus the stairs. So we're going to be talking about crypto, NFTs, business building strategies, investing in real. There's going to be some speakers there on real estate, you know, a whole host of amazing different topics. So I just think of trying to bring the biggest, best and brightest, bringing them in and just dumping as much concentrated stuff so people can really have the leg up for the next year, two or three and really seeing around corners.
And there's such a benefit, not only into beautiful location, warm weather, beautiful ocean, sand, great experts, but then to put 400 or 500 peers, 400 or 500 like-minded professionals together. There is, I think Napoleon Hill started that about the third mind that's created, in the mastermind. And my experience, when you can get 300, 400, 500 of those people together, the energy is so thick, you can cut it with a knife.
Oh yeah. Well, I don't know if I told you this, Don, but the last night we actually reserved some boats. And we're boating everybody out to a private island for a party the last night.
Oh my gosh.
So everyone's going out to an evening sunset dinner beachside party where everyone after the event, we all get to hang out, we all get to mingle, take some sunset pictures, have dinner right on the beach on a private island. So to me, I know there's gonna be some great content, but I'm almost looking more forward to that experience than anything else and hanging out with people in the Caribbean. So, which I'll tell you what, Don, for those people that are listening and as followers and people in the tribe of the Proven Entrepreneur, I'll tell you what, that the first two people that message me, I'll give them a complimentary ticket per Don Williams. I mean, I know Don, you're not paying for it, but I'll put your name on it that you are the sponsor just as a thank you to your audience and a thank you to you, Don. I'll give two tickets to the first two people that message and say, hey, I want to come and hang out with a lot of smart entrepreneurs, and I want to up-level my game, hang out with you and Gary Vee. So I'll do that as a gift. I know you weren't asking for it, but you're a great guy. I love you. You're a giver, so I like to give back. So there you go.
So here's what I have to say to that. Everybody knows I am all about the wow, and that is a wow. Thaddeus, thank you so much. Two people, okay, reach out to you, Doc,
just
or to me?
Just find me on social. Reach out either on Instagram or Facebook or TikTok or wherever. Just message me and say, hey, I heard you on the Don Williams Show, and I heard you talking about it, and I would love to be considered. But here's the thing. you have to tell me at least one thing that you learned from this podcast or one thing you love about Don that you learned to, so I know that you're paying attention and someone didn't just give you the, send you the link. So say, just say something cool that you learned that you love about this show. And just let me know that you're engaged and that you are a follower of Don's. Because I think, I don't know if for sure, Don, but I know people like, so here's the thing. Gary Vaynerchuk practices what he preaches. And I think one of the things is that, you know, it may not relate to everyone, but here's the thing. He has built such a brand. And we know that building a brand, just like you've done, which is tremendous, is that you know, I've heard people like Brad Lee and other people say that the next $500,000 that people are really going to make is going to come from personal brands and with social media and everything we're doing. And you look at someone like Gary Vee, he's gotten to the point now to where I think to go to his events, it's $17,000. Now, our tickets right now are $3,000, but I think they're actually still reduced for a couple more days, but I think they're like $3,000. And I don't think Gary Vee is actually speaking at any other outside events anymore other than his own, because he's so big, because of the things that he's doing and the things he's going to be sharing, he implements. So I think just to even see Gary Vee speak on in other stages, it's a minimum of $17,000 to $20,000. And our event might be one of the last public events that he's speaking at. So I've heard from a few people through the grapevine.
Yeah, don't miss out. And there's not many tickets left anyway. Don't miss out. Don't delay. Don't wait too long. Okay. You'll never regret acting timely for things that will go away. Okay, so Thaddeus, tell us about your current business. Okay, you're doing the Guardians Retreat. Okay, yep. But tell us about your normal business operations. What are you doing?
Yeah, so I got three main buckets. One was healthcare. I first got into healthcare to try to save my mom's life. My folks moved up. There were a couple of hippies in the 70s and thought they were going to build a house out in the middle of the woods, and they did just that. I mean, I grew up with electricity half the time. We had kerosene lamps and, you know, running water most of the time. We didn't have a phone until I was, you know, born. My brother and they were all living there for a while. So they definitely were hippies, and I didn't grow up with much. And my mom got really sick, and so I went into natural health care years ago to try to save her life. So one of my buckets is healthcare. So now I don't really see patients that much directly, but I've gotten to the point of where, you know, and here's one piece of advice I'll give for the listeners, and that is something that was told to me years ago, and it was this. It was, you know, when you first start off in practice, now practice, AKA your job, whatever it is, that your patients / your clients will write your schedule. And then later in your career and life, you'll write your schedule. And I would say that's very true from the standpoint now of putting in the hard work. And no matter where someone is on their journey entrepreneurially, is that, you know, I would encourage people, never compare your backstage to someone else's front stage. So even as things I share, you may be way ahead of me, or you may be way behind me, but I really wouldn't even look at it as a head or ahead or behind. It's just, that's where you are on your own journey. So right now, you know, I work personally with about 5 people a year for high-end entrepreneurial optimization that really want peak performance. But in the clinics, our team is amazing. They see about 50,000 patient visits a year. I work about an hour a month on that. We have an amazing team. So that's one bucket. But then years ago, I said, you know, I called up my CPA and I said, I don't like this letter you sent me. He said, what's that? I said, you sent me a nasty letter. He said, what do you mean? I said, you sent me this mean letter that says that I owe $250,000 in taxes. He said, well, that's the way it is. I said, but I only have $30,000 in the bank account. I said, this doesn't work for me. He said, well, you know, if I had a nickel every time I heard that, you know, death and taxes. And I thought, well, you know, the doctors years and years ago told my mom that she'd be spending the rest of her life in a wheelchair, and I was able to save her life. I mean, now she's 75 years old. She runs and wins 5K races. She's in complete remission off all her pain meds. And so the light bulb went off. So my second career was really, how do I help entrepreneurs reduce and eliminate taxes? So for the last 7-8 years, I've been in the financial space, and I can usually reduce, you know, myself, between myself, my team, we can usually get an entrepreneur's taxes down by about 96%. So if they're paying $100,000 in taxes, we can usually get that down to about $4,000 or $5,000 and keep them completely liquid. And then my third thing would be, I fumbled through real estate and I happen to be really good at it. So now I'm going deeper and bigger on real estate. Yeah, I kind of just fumbled through it. And all of a sudden I woke up one day and I realized I'm almost making more money doing this than I am anything else. So I should actually put some concerted effort into it.
I love that. And I so love that. Putting your time, your effort, and your energy in things that you are naturally good at.
100%.
If it's really, really hard to do, you know, maybe wrong. There may be a reason it's really, really hard. All of us will perform much higher if we stay in our zone of genius and ignore our zone of incompetence. And competence, and the hard one to ignore is your zone of excellence, things that you do really, really well. And entrepreneurs typically have a big field of excellence, but in your zone of genius, there you can actually be magnificent.
Yeah.
And I love that. So I love healthcare, and hey, let's not pay any more taxes than we have to. And, you know, we're recording today, March 15th. This is a big day in the States for business owners. Yeah. And so half of us are paying and half of us are extending. Yeah. But
well, here's the thing. I mean, it's no secret that wealthy people don't pay taxes. It's no secret. And so why is that? Well, because they've just figured out the game, and that's all there is to it. I mean, and here's the problem. There's two types of CPAs. There's those CPAs that just crunch numbers and say, this is what you owe. That's what I used to have. And then there's those CPAs that crunch numbers and say, this is what you owe, and here's some other strategies we can do to reduce or eliminate it. There really isn't any reason why you can't reduce or eliminate your taxes, unless you're completely trapped into an old way of thinking. And that's the problem, is most of us have conventional wisdom and we just keep doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. And I think one of the things that you just said, Dom, that I really love is kind of reminds me of these different buckets in this algorithm of looking at it from the standpoint of, you know, is this something that I'm not good at and that I hate? Well, those things you should try to get off your plate as quickly as possible.
Absolutely.
All the way on the other spectrum of, these are things that I do so well that I just love doing them. And the way you'll know this is it's like breathing for you. And people will often say things such as, I can't believe that you do that. That is amazing. And your response is, oh, really? Like that's not that hard. Those kind of things, that's when you know you're in your zone of genius. Now, ideally, the stuff that you hate and you're bad at, you're getting off your plate. And the stuff that you're really good at and you love, you're really doing more of that. And ideally, then you look at the things that you're good at and you love, and then just ask yourself, are they things that are making money and moving the needle? Great, do more of that. Or are they things that I just really enjoy doing and are more of a fulfillment and so forth? And those two things, just make sure that you have that balance. And so you're doing things that are moving the needle, and then you're also doing things that are filling your cup on the spectrum of things that I'm really good at and things that I love.
I love that. And you know, on that spectrum, to me, the most dangerous segment is that things I do excellently, things I do really, really well. And you're like, okay, I get it. But there's a few things you do that you're almost magical at.
Right.
That feed your spirit, feed your soul, and people say, I can't believe you do that. And many times they're in your blind spot. And so you're like, I don't know, it wasn't that big a deal. But but it actually is a big deal. It just happens to be your natural gift, your natural zone of genius. And so what I've learned is just play there and avoid the rest best you can.
Well, that's how we all will excel, right? We'll all excel. And, you know, I heard one of my mentors say one time, he said, you know, there's not one perfect job for everyone, but there's a perfect job for everyone. Because the things that, you know, maybe I don't want, I remember there was a time where I wanted to work in the forestry service, and I just loved outdoors, and I still do. And I probably could have been really happy at that. But at the same time, I also know I really love people, and I just don't want to be out in the woods all the time by myself. So as much as I love that, and I love doses of it, I know I didn't want it as a career. So, you know, I think there's something to be said for finding your, you know, what is it, your ikigai, you're finding those, where those, in those Venn diagrams where those circles overlap, and really trying to stay in there, and then outsourcing, eliminating or delegating all the things that aren't your unique ability or the things that really fill your cup, so that you really can stay in your zone of genius. Now, I fully admit there's always going to be something throughout our life that we're going to have to do that we don't like. And I think that's where the stoicism comes in, to help practice that and get that balance. And then you can go back to working with your team or your mentors to try to move that needle back towards your zone of genius. So I think for me, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on that too, Don, but I think for me, it's trying to lean into that has gotten me where I'm at, successful with multiple clinics, with the real estate, with where I am in the financial space, because all those things were wanting to scratch me an itch. And for me, one of my zone of genius is that I'm okay taking risks. And I say that because when I opened my first clinic, I was so focused on saving my mom's life and helping people that I didn't know what I was doing. Ignorance is bliss. I was opening up and building a brand new building right around 2009, 2010. So what was going on then, right? That was a huge housing crisis. I had no idea what was going on. I didn't even know how I got a loan at the time. I was only making around $3,000 to $4,000 a month. And I was only making around $3,000 or $4,000 a month. And somehow I got a loan, and the loan, just the loan, a bit loan on the loan alone on the building was around $4,500, almost more than what I was making. And if not more. And I just said, you know, I'm going to figure it out. And I think that's one of my unique abilities, is just figuring things out. I'm a student of life. I'll lean in and I'll learn. So I really would encourage people to look back over transformational moments in your life, those defining times, those fork in the road moments that shaped your future and where you are now. I think it was, I forget who the philosopher was, but they said, you know, day to day, nothing really changes. But when you look back, it's amazing to see the difference. I think we can look back and we can really see the difference, even though day to day, it might not seem like much is changing. But when we look back, we can usually see those fork in the roads. And I would just offer people, look at those fork in the road opportunity as those were your opportunity moments that you had. You know, you had problems in front of you, and how well you solve problems usually relates to how successful you are in life, because life is just a series of opportunities or opportunities disguised as problems. And so being really good at solving problems will help move it along. But looking back at those transformative moments and say, how did my zone of genius show up in that moment that allowed me and afforded me to know which fork in that road to take? And then how did I do, and how did that turn into a success for me? Whatever that may be for you. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, or maybe a moment for you as well.
Well, so I think you're spot on. And a common denominator is when those events occur and you reach that fork in the road and you pick. And I can tell you that the real magic happened for me when I quit playing in my head and started playing from my heart. And I know that people think we make our decisions, we're very analytical and we're very logical. We make our decisions based in our head. And I'm not saying do things that are illogical and nonsensical, but I am saying your heart will lead you the right way most of the time. And so, one, following your heart, and two, don't stop. Keep going. Many times the solution to the problem is just another step away. And so you just can't quit. There are an awful lot of overnight successes that actually, if you got the whole story, took 20 years.
Yeah, the 20-year overnight success, right?
Yeah, and so that's very, very common. And so then the other piece, because to me, foundationally, it's all mindset anyway. You cannot achieve anything you cannot imagine. Okay. Right. And you know this about me, Thaddeus. I'm a huge gratitude junkie. I believe in the intentional daily practice of gratitude. And what I know about gratitude is this: the more you practice gratitude, the more grateful you become. And pretty soon you're not just grateful for the good things, but you're grateful for the not so good things. And then you're even finding ways to be grateful for the things that aren't good. Because we know this. As entrepreneurs, we either win or we learn.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, you will realize that learning is just slower winning.
Yeah.
We win or we win. We either win quickly or we win a little slower pace, but only if we don't stop. And we can't let the negative events in life, of which there are going to be, we can't let them own us.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Process it and move on.
Yep. Don't. 100%. Well, there's always things you can be looking at that are negative. I mean, you can find plenty of negatives, and you can also find infinite positives. And the fact that our brains are wired to focus on negatives, because that's, you know, one of our survival instincts, is that it takes intentionality to focus on the positives. But if, like you said, if you do that, it's a muscle just like anything else, and you can grow that muscle. And then, you know, I know for me, one thing in our clinic, especially when I was opening up, is that, you know, so many people, you know, we we would have problems / opportunities for solutions every single day. And I would tell people when they come to me, they'd say, "Hey, Dr. Yal, we have a problem." I said, "What do we have?" They're like, and then kind of like laugh and kind of laugh at themselves. "We have an opportunity for a solution." I'd say, "Great. And what's your solution?" And it's a muscle, just like anything else. And then even today, all team members, even some team members that don't even work for us anymore, that have gone on or who knows what, you know, just life has happened. And they'll reach out and say, "I still remember when you taught me that." And I still tell people that we don't have problems. We have opportunities for solutions. And I look at life as a series of opportunities for solutions. Because what between whatever you're wanting to accomplish and wherever you are now, it's a series of opportunities for solution hurdles, you know, whether it be a river or a mountain or whatever it is you're trying to get through the other side of the forest, you know, there's obstacles in your way. And you can either just say, "Yeah, this doesn't work," or you can keep pushing forward. And I think almost all of us, if Elon Musk were to throw in the towel and say, "This is just too hard," I don't know too many people that would say, "Well, suck it up." I think almost all of us would say, "Yeah, I don't blame him because that's really hard." But I think one thing about Elon that's unique and we can all learn from is that he just looks at it as a series of solutions. So and those problems were already lined out. And if you look at something more tangible, just like a game of pool, you can see that to win, it's just a series of putting these balls in the holes before the other person, right? So you have a series of problems. Each one of those balls is a problem that you need to solve, right? You need what's the angle? So, I mean, you're problem solving, and that's all you're doing. And if you can problem solve better, you're going to win before the other guy, right? Now, if we had infinite calculating capabilities and we could freeze time and we knew that, you know, player X had a bum elbow because he bumped it on the door on the way in, and, you know, whatever the case is, you know, he missed 1 hour's of sleep and that reduced his ability to focus by 23%. You know, we could calculate he's going to hit the ball and he always pulls to the left. And, you know, we could calculate where all the balls are going to go, and we could kind of know what all the problems were going to be even before that first break. And so I kind of share that because I really look at it as me, I kind of put my mind in the sense of, the problems that you're facing were already going to happen, in the sense of, you know, that nail in the middle of the road that just fell out of that truck, it just fell out because Joe forgot to tarp down his construction job that he was just leaving. So that nail is already 2 miles down the road, and you're going to be that first car, and you're going to get it, and you're going to be late to work or whatever. So when that happens, number one, you can choose to not get upset, because that nail was already waiting for you. We all know something bad is going to happen. But then at the same time, we can look at it and say, "Oh, this was just one of my pool balls. And I should have known that these kind of pool balls are out there for me in the world. And I just have to problem solve." Now, take that to a bigger degree. That same is true whether it's our health goals, you know, whether we really want to lose weight or gain weight, whether we're trying to get off meds or whatever the case is, or whether we're trying to grow our business, whether we're trying to make our next million. We're trying to do a real estate deal and we don't have the right funding for it. All of those are just pool balls. And you just need to, and the more that you practice solving, the more you have those trick shots, the more you have those capabilities, the more that those pool balls then become solution oriented, as opposed to, "I can never make that shot." And I think if people, for me, I know if I hold it in my mind's eye in that perspective, it really helps me distill down what seems to live in the ether. It seems to quantify it for me, so then I can look at it more systematically in terms of how to solve those problems. And also have a certain level of peace, gratitude, and contentment that, gosh, I'm just grateful that I even have a car to get a flat tire on.
Absolutely. Yeah. So many things to be grateful for if you boil it down. And our listeners know I'm a big believer in, get a journal, and I don't care if it's a fancy journal or a yellow pad, doesn't make any difference, but write it down. And yeah, one of those people who does not have great handwriting, and it would be much better for everybody if I never wrote it down, but there's something about our brains, and write it down is different than record it, video record it, type it into Word, write it down.
One thing that I think is cool is if you do something like I have a bunch of these little sticky notepads on my desk, but one thing that I think is good is that you can just try this for a week is get your little sticky pad and write down three things that you're grateful for. Just leave it in your bathroom, and leave it by like your toothbrush or something with a pen. And every either morning or night before you go to bed, just write down three things that you're grateful for and really own it. Like, not just, oh, I'm grateful that I have toothpaste. I mean, that's great, but really own it and sit in it and really appreciate it. And then for me, I try to think, if I didn't have this, what would my life be like? Meaning, if I didn't have it at all, meaning it was gone 100%, you know, like dental floss. If I never had dental floss ever again, you know, that would cause some discomfort in my life. And how grateful I am for that little piece of floss, you know, even though I'm sitting there distracted. And this can obviously be anything in the world. I'm not just saying things within your bathroom, but write these down and then just put those sticky notes on your mirror. And then after a week, just look back and just look at all those things, and you can be re-reminded of it. And, you know, I like the exercise. I've heard people say this before, is, you know, before you go to bed, write down the things that you're grateful for or think of them. And just imagine that whatever you weren't grateful for, if you woke up the next morning, you didn't have those things. And that will immediately put things in perspective. And I think that then you become more solution oriented. And then that's how you can start working on focusing problems. And whether it be in your business, but maybe your income isn't where it needs to be. You start finding key strategic team members, and then you create this winning culture and this winning mindset that then translates over, and your customers, your clients feel that, because no one wants to go to a funeral. Everyone wants to go to a party. And I had this one chiropractor tell me one time, he came to me and he said, because of you, I'm going to have to go out of business. I said, what do you mean? He said, I tried to come into town and open up a practice, but I just couldn't do it. I said, well, I'm not doing anything intentionally. He said, well, you guys just have so much fun over there. All the patients in this town are going to your practice, and you're finding the best talent because everyone just is going over there. And he said, because no one wants to go to a funeral, everyone wants to go to a party. And I felt bad for him, and he kind of walked off. And I realized that, you know, a year later, he actually did close down his practice. But I realized that even when he came to me, he was kind of Eeyore-ish. And he kind of was like, well, yeah, because of you, I'm not going to be able to make it. My heart felt bad for him, because I wanted to try to help him and say, well, you need to raise your energy up. You need to, you know, you need to be present. And everyone that comes in, you need to be 100% there for them. So I really do think is how we show up, it permeates to our team, to our clients, and that energy then translates into everything we're doing. And here's the thing I would say, Don, is I would encourage people, look at where you're at. Look in the mirror. And ask yourself, health-wise, am I where I want to be? Look in the bank account. Am I financially where I want to be? And wherever you're at, doesn't matter whether it's good or bad or whatever label you want to put at it, just start by being honest and recognize that wherever you are in anything in your life, that's a lagging indicator of your habits and your thoughts, your beliefs, and your actions around that. So if you have $2 in the bank account, recognize and just be honest and say, yep, I don't have good habits or beliefs around money, yeah. You know, or whatever or relationships, you know. If you're single and you're thinking, man, I've been with 20 women. Well, you know, maybe it's not the women that are the problem, you know, or vice versa, or whatever the case may be. So I think being honest with ourselves will allow for that genuine reflection, and then course correction if we so choose.
Yeah. Love that. Look at where you're at and then be encouraged with this fact. That maybe 25% of the journey on where you want to go happens in the first step, just in deciding,
yeah,
I want to change. And, yep. And it sounds like it's just one step, and it is, but it's one of those steps that travels a long way, okay? Because merely wanting to, merely making the decision is like a quarter of the work.
Okay? Oh, it is, yep.
It's where most people get stopped, is they can't or don't or won't. They ultimately choose not to make the decision to change. And change is hard.
Yeah, hey, it is.
That's the truth. But there are resources available for every change you want to make. And so, you know, in my consulting business, I share with people, hey, everybody's trying to go from A to B. Okay. And I get it. But you want people to help you that can push A and B closer together. It's the elevator instead of the stairs. You don't have to do it the hard way. There is maybe some easier ways to do it. And it just takes asking and talking to enough people, the right people, to find their ways. If you want to get someplace, the easiest way to do it is find somebody who's there and have them coach you, have them consult you, have them mentor you.
Yeah, okay? Clap time.
If you put your feet in their footsteps, you cannot arrive any place but where they are.
I love that. When you said it, I thought about when I was a kid, you know, we grew up way out in the woods and we'd go in the snow. And I remember following in my dad's footsteps in the snow, you know, because he would blaze the trail. And we were little kids, you know, obviously we'd have to kind of step further to get to it. But I know that if we did that, it would save a lot of energy. And you're right, we would get exactly where he was going. You know, we would make it there. You know, I love what you just said is that, you know, I think about it, you know, people will come to me and say, you know, they'll ask me for mentorship or coaching, kind of what you just said. And they'll say, you know, so, okay, so, you know, my goal this year is to make, you know, $5 million or whatever the case may be, you know, or I want to make, you know, another $10 million in real estate or whatever the case, or health. I want to improve my health by X. And they'll say, well, why isn't it happening faster? And I say, well, let me say this. You can collapse the time, but here's the thing. And I don't mean to mince words, but, you know, it's kind of like if you put a tomato seed in the ground, you know, that takes a certain amount of time for that plant to grow and to ripen. You know, you can't put, you know, it's kind of like what they say. It's like a baby takes 9 months, you know, to develop. You can't get 9 women pregnant and develop and expect a baby in 1 month. You know, it just doesn't work that way. But here's the thing. If you want to have it to be a plant, a whole field of beautiful, gorgeous, you know, ripe red tomatoes that are just absolutely delicious, you can go out there and you can hand plant them and you can try to put them right in the concrete, which isn't going to work. Or you can learn the practices that can help maybe you find the right field, the right nutrients, and the right practices and strategies to where you can plant that field in an eighth, you know, a tenth of the time or a hundredth of the time and get twice as good of yield. So I would almost kind of say that there's, you know, there's not any shortcuts, but you can definitely speed things up and you can save a lot of time in that process. Like you said, to get to the top, you still got to go through those steps, but you can take the elevator versus taking the stairs and you can save a tremendous amount of energy in the process. That then you can be focusing on doing other things that are filling your cup more. So yeah, I mean, if you want a field of daisies or a field of tomatoes, or pick your analogy or metaphor, and you can definitely find people that can collapse time for you and save time and save you a lot of gnashing of teeth and hair pulling in the process if you surround yourself with the right playmates and the right playgrounds. Because we know, you know, psychologists say really clearly that environment is the single biggest predictor of behavior. So surrounding yourself with the right people, that's where you will gravitate towards. And I mean, an easy example, if you're hanging out with your kids, what kind of conversations are you likely having? I'm not saying it's good or bad, but if you hang out with your kids and you hang out with your kids and your kids' friends all day long, let's say you're doing a birthday party and you're really focused on the kids, what are the conversations that are gonna be taking place that you're gonna be focusing on, that your energy is gonna be on, right? Again, I'm not saying it's good or bad, but now at the same time, if you go to, let's say, like our annual retreat, and you're surrounding yourself with people like Gary Vee, Bobby Sophia Castro, myself, you know, those kind of things, what kind of conversations are going to be coming out of that, you know, versus hanging out with kids all day? Again, I'm not saying one is right or wrong, but just asking yourself, where do you want to go and how are you surrounding yourself to take that elevator versus the stairs?
Yeah, because we all know that we are very closely aligned to the 5 people we spend most of our time, effort, and energy with. And so you want to be very careful about the 5 people that you select, because they're going to have a huge influence on you and your life.
And this is a framework that for people listening, I would encourage people listening that this is a framework you can share with your customers and your clients. If you're, let's just say, if you're a mechanic, you know, and they're saying, oh gosh, you know, maybe is it, you know, why is it going to cost me this much? Or, you know, what's this going to take? Say, well, you know, I can, you know, you can go fix this on your own, you know, but how long is that going to take you versus hiring us to do it? You know, we'll get it done in X amount of time. So you'll be back out and you can get to work again or whatever the case may be. So I really think that, you know, surrounding yourself with the right playmates and the right playgrounds is how you can solve your problems faster. I mean, if you're in a mechanic desert, and you have your car breakdown, well, you're SOL, you know, you don't have that luxury. So people and that we have around, we really are. Your solution for your clients is to collapse time for them. And so if you can put it in that framework, then you can become the hero to your clients and to your customers. You know, if you're, again, if you are a tow truck, you're there ready to go. So when you hit that nail and you have that flat tire and someone's late for work, and let's say you can respond faster than anyone else, well, now you're the hero because you just collapsed time and you just allowed that person to get to work on time, save their job, you know, which then translates to all these other benefits in their life because you're able to solve their problem. So here's the thing. I would say there's two things here, right? One is how well we solve problems for ourselves so we can show up better in the world. And then how well do we solve problems for our clients and our customers with our service and product and make it as brain dead easy as possible. It's one of the things that, you know, when we talk about, you know, making an offer to our clients is how much work can you do to make it super easy for them? So at the end of the day, you're looked at as the natural solution. So like for us, we make it brain dead simple for people. Like with our taxes, for instance, I say, look, you're paying, you know, I always tell people, look, if you're paying more than $10,000 in taxes, you need to find a new CPA, period. Like, it's really that simple. Like, you don't need to mince words. I don't care if they're your best friends. If you're paying more than 10 grand in taxes, find a new CPA. But really, it's collapsing that time, right? So if you have a CPA that can do that, then wonderful. So for us, if we tell someone, look, we're going to reduce your taxes by 96%. So if you're paying 100 grand in taxes, we can get that down to 4,000. And it's only going to take you 30 minutes to fill out this form. And we do all the process for you. I mean, that's brain dead simple, right? We have a CPA sign off on it. They stamp it. Like everything's done. It's automated. That's really easy versus if you say, well, here's the IRS codes. Here's everything. You know, go spend this weekend going through 70,000 pages. Good luck, right? So I would encourage people listening, what can you do to automate your product or your service so that it's falling off a log easy for your clients to utilize? You know, I think even Elon Musk with Tesla, I forget what it was, but there was a feature he added recently. And I think it was even something with like the, you know, I know this already happens because I have a Tesla and I love it. But if you have a key in your pocket and you just walk up to the car, it senses you about so far away. So right when you get there, the door handle automatically extends for you to open up. And so, you know, there's so many things. And when I get in the car, oftentimes, if there's a place I normally go and if I'm getting in the car at the same time, it'll automatically put in a map and find the fastest way to get to where I'm going if it automatically assumes that that's where I'm going. So Tesla is constantly refining and they're creating more solutions for me and its users just based off of their experience so that for me, I just love the experience of using a Tesla because it's so automated and tailored and it just solves my problem. So I don't have to, I know it seems small, but to not have to then punch in where I'm going again on the map and that automatically comes up and it's right, maybe, you know, 60, 70% of the time, those little things really add up. I can just look over, I see the map. Yep, that's where I'm going. And now I can focus again. It really adds up and it makes raving fans. So I would really encourage people listening, think about your product and service. Where do you get complaints on? Where are their friction points? And what can you do to reduce that friction so people can have a more streamlined, easy experience so that they can achieve the transformation that you're offering, but do it in a much easier manner to where you actually are doing more of the work for them or you automate it for them.
No doubt. So we all know time kills deals. The longer it takes to win a deal, the less likely you are to win the deal. And friction is to be avoided at all costs.
Yep.
If it's really all about the customer all of the time, how do I make it easy, simple, fast, and fun doesn't hurt. Okay. People, when they're having fun, they'll spend more, they'll buy more often, they'll send more friends because it's fun. And, you know, so a little customer journey mapping, if you're not familiar with that, there's people who can help you with that, but see everything from the customer's point of view. And then understand that in some environments in your company, your team is actually your customers. And then your customers belong to your team. They're their customers.
I like that.
They're not really yours. They're really their customers. But if I take care of my team and You know, those of you who know me know I wrote the book on romancing your customer. And when you deal with your customer the way you would deal with a love interest, where you see everything from their point of view, okay, and you try and anticipate and surpass the delivery of every need, people will love you and you won't be able to keep them from buying from you. They will buy and they will rebuy and they will send their friends. And
I would say, I would follow that up with saying, my experience with you, Don, has been nothing short of that. You've been, I know we've had some technical difficulties getting on this schedule, but and us even doing this call today. So my experience with you has been absolutely right there. I mean, I've had some interviews that I've gone on that, you know, as soon as there's a little glitch, the sky starts seeming like it's falling. And you've taken so many things in stride and you've made it so easy for me to show up relaxed and ready to go that it's been absolutely dreamy. Now, the only complaint that I have is that I haven't got a copy of your book yet, Don. So you have to tell me where I can find it, where I can go to get a copy of your book.
Well, you can find all of my books on the wonderful Amazon.com, Romancing Your Customer, my second book. And I'm a big believer in writing books. We'll get you on stages, and stages will take you places that you had no idea that you might go. And so, just a couple months ago, released book number 4, and I'm working on 5 and 6 simultaneously. I'm not sure that's wise, but I'm doing it anyway, and I have words, and I want to share. So there we go.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. Well, as soon as we get off here, I'm going to have to go on Amazon and have to get one of your books. So now I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you so very much. Okay, so I want to talk about your personal entrepreneurial journey for a couple of minutes.
Sure.
Okay, so you were raised in the forests of Oregon by parents previously known as hippies.
Yep.
Okay, God love them. Okay, God love them. And so as a young child, was somebody setting an entrepreneurial example for you?
Well, that's a great question. I think that probably, you know, was at its core an entrepreneurial pioneer. I guess you could say it, entrepreneurial / pioneer mindset that was instilled in my parents. I mean, my dad got out of Vietnam and my mom was a student teacher and they met, you know, my dad went back to school and he got out and met my mom and they were down in LA and they said, "We're out of here." And they said, "We want to go live out in the woods." And it was, they kind of had this vision of wanting to do a little house in the prairie. And they sure as heck pretty much succeeded. Besides the fact that we actually did have a car, but we had horses, but we didn't have a horse-drawn carriage. But other than that, there was a lot of similarities to a little house in the prairie. I mean, we had a wood cook stove that my mom would make food on. You know, we'd have the chickens that we'd go down and we'd butcher every year and we'd, you know, for our meat and you know, so we had the garden, all that stuff, right? So I think from that, we were constantly solving problems all day long because we just had to, you know, if the pipes freeze and there's no water, you got to figure it out. If the well goes dry, you got to figure it out. You know, if we're out of oil for the lamps, you got to figure it out. If the chainsaw breaks, you know, and you got to get firewood for the winter, you figure it out. So I think I was in a state where I was constantly seeing the mindset of solving problems and what, you know, we'd have range cattle or the deer would come and get in the garden. So we had to, you know, build a fence. So, you know, we'd have the raccoons that would come and steal all the pears before we could can them. So, I mean, it's all these things that you're just constantly solving problems. You know, we had one time we had a raccoon that would come in and want to eat our rabbits and our chickens. And so we had to set up traps to catch the raccoons and the bobcats. So, I mean, we're just constantly solving problems all the time growing up. And I think that was it, even though both my parents were teachers. So here's the thing. I think it was both my parents were teachers. So they really instilled and I really saw the power and the benefit of education. And that was really instilled in me. And seeing this entrepreneurial nature of you just figure things out. And there wasn't room there wasn't time to complain because when you're out in the middle of the woods and there's no one around, nobody cares.
Nobody's listening.
Nobody cares. You know, so, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, if you have a raccoon that comes, you know, over a night or two or some stellar jays or whatever, and they eat all the cherries or all the pears or all the fruit or whatever you're about to harvest, and they eat all that first, nobody cares. I mean, you just have to figure it out and you have to go on from there. You know, our pigs got loose and we had to go find them out in the woods. Nobody cares. You can't say, the pigs got loose. Well, woe is me. Yeah. Okay. And now you got to go find them. You have to go track them down.
Find the pigs.
Yeah. So I really think that it's the mindset of, you know, and also back then we didn't have social media, right? So we couldn't get on there and complain and just, you know, getting political arguments with strangers. You know, we actually had to just show up and do stuff every day and get things done because, you know, when the sun came up, I remember in the summertime, I'd wake up and I would listen to where the chainsaw was out in the woods. And basically you would just get your gear, you would get your clothes, get your work gloves, and you start walking out in the woods and find out wherever dad was. And you'd start splitting wood and loading the truck full of firewood. And that's just, you know, kind of how the summers went. Or then you'd come back and work in the garden or work with the animals. So, you know, you just do stuff. And I think that mindset of not complaining because no one cares because they got their own shit, excuse my language, but they got their own stuff that they're dealing with. Everyone's got their own stuff. So, you know, no one's going to care. So just roll up your sleeves, just do it, be great and lean into it. And I think that probably laid the foundation. And with that, I mean, hard work, right? I mean, you do a job half-ass, it's going to come out half-ass and you're the one's going to have to do it later. So, you know, you're cutting off your nose to spite your face if you don't do it right the first time. So you might as well do it right the first time. So I think hard work, doing things right, being grateful for what we had. And I think also too, Don, with today's day and age, with this world of abundance that we're in, for me, I mean, even though I have, you know, tens of millions of dollars of real estate and my businesses, you know, I have several businesses, 7-8 figures, et cetera, you know, across different businesses that, you know, someone could say, well, Thaddeus, look how well you're doing. You know, you're this is great and everything. But at the end of the day, like none of that really matters to me. My baseline is really, really low. I could lose it all and be back living in a tent. And I would be arguably as happy and satisfied as I am now living in a chateau. So I think when you set your baseline really, really low, your tolerance for BS is through the roof. You have so much tolerance for BS because little things don't get under your skin. Because if things were to fall apart, your baseline is so low. I mean, I tell that to my mom sometimes because I encourage her to invest in real estate. And every time she gets a little bit anxious about buying another piece of real estate, which makes sense. She's a retired kindergarten teacher. She's not in finance. She never really got into real estate. I got her to start investing a few years ago in her late 60s. And now she's in her early 70s and she's a millionaire. For a retired school teacher that didn't start investing until her late 60s, I think she's doing pretty good.
Yeah.
But every time she's going to go to reinvest, she kind of gets nervous. I said, Mom, what's your baseline? I said, you have people that love you. If you lost everything today, you're not going to be homeless. Heck, it might even be something cool. You could come live with myself or with your other son, my brother, you know, whatever the case may be. You're not going to be homeless. That might be a fun adventure. And heck, Mom, you've lived in a tent before and built a house. So your baseline is low. You know you can do it. And I can just see the stress just kind of go away. And she realized a lot of things that she was anxious about, she had no reason to be anxious about because it was all going to work out. And then she'd get clarity of mind, focus on the task at hand, look at all those pool balls, figure out the best angle, how to set up, take your shot, and go for it.
Love that. And I have a good friend, billionaire entrepreneur, and his definition for the word wouldn't work for Webster's, but it's someone who is self-reliant and a problem solver. It doesn't actually have anything to do with business, but, you know, my own background, both sets of grandparents were wheat farmers, one in North Dakota and one in Kansas and Oklahoma. And it was kind of the same thing. There's nobody to gripe to. If it's a problem, go fix the problem. And if you don't have time to do it right, you'll never find time to do it over. And we have other stuff to do tomorrow. So take care of it. And, you know, my first paying job was driving a John Deere tractor during wheat harvest behind the combines, which is the filthiest, nastiest job on the planet because there's all this dust and half in the air and it's 117 degrees. It's not that high. It's 100 degrees outside and it's horrible. But I learned two things. One, I learned what hard work really is. And any day I'm not driving that John Deere tractor in 100 degree heat, that's not really hard work because that was hard work. And I knew I didn't want to be and have huge appreciation for people who grow our food because it's not easy.
Okay?
Yeah. That's hard work.
Well, I've been a busboy. My first tax-paying job was a busboy at the Outback Steakhouse. And I've also worked, I've been a server, I've been a bartender, I've worked at different front of the houses, operations and restaurants throughout the years. And especially when I was going through college and school and so forth. And now when I go to a restaurant, if a meal is late, if they messed up, if something happened, I have zero concern over it. It really doesn't bother me at all. I have zero concern over it because I've been on that side and I realize things happen despite best intentions and best effort. And everyone's doing the best they can with what they have when they have it. And I think, having that patience and that compassion for others, especially knowing that I've walked a mile in their shoes and I've been there, I think that's huge. And I think if we can show up with more passion, more patience and compassion for ourselves and for others, and realizing that, if we were them, we'd be doing the exact same thing. If we grew up in their family, if our brain was wired the way they were, if we had the same experience this morning as they did, if we had the same trials and tribulations / opportunities that they have, we would be showing up exactly like they are. And I think that's there's a confirmation bias that we have that gives me a good reflection that typically when we look at somebody and they're doing something of let's say, maybe something of ill repute or something that we don't find favorable, we'll say, we'll relate it to behavioral relate reasons. But when we do something that's of negative, we chalk it up to situational. And yeah. So when it's others, we say that's their behavior, they're a bad person. But when it's us, we said, well, what was I supposed to do? I did what any logical person would have done in that situation. I flipped the guy off and let him know what I've thought, So I think if we can be honest and realize that we're all doing the best we can and in our worst of moment, we probably wouldn't like ourselves if we were looking at it from the outside.
I love that.
I think we can all smile at each other, slow down, and have a little more love and compassion.
We all carry a pass for ourselves when we don't behave at our best. And we're like, well, here's my free pass.
Right.
But we typically don't give that free pass to other people. And if we gave it as quickly to them as we did to ourselves, it'd be a better world. And yeah. I'll share with the audience a great tip that's romance your customer kind of backwards and sideways. So I, as I'm sure you do, I fly a lot. I'm fortunate to get to fly up front. And I'm in Dallas-Fort Worth, so I fly American Airlines most of the time. And I have a bazillion miles with America. But they're not necessarily known for the warmest experience from the flight attendant to the passenger. And I do think it's gotten better over the years. But what I learned a long time ago was this. When in the aisle and they're trying to take drink orders and passengers aren't even looking at them, if you'll just look at your flight attendant, and I know their name is on their shirt, but just look them in the eye and say, I'm sorry, what was your name? And well, I'm Mary. Hi, Mary. I'm Don. Nice to meet you. And just recognize them as a person. Just romance your service provider for a second. It will take a second. And then for the rest of the flight, you'll be able to giggle because they will deliver white glove, red carpet, concierge level service to you. And they're not doing that with anybody else in your section.
Right.
And yeah. And it's just a matter of answering your customer, seeing things from the other person's point of view,
and
delivering it the way you'd want it. And I like me, so I would deliver pretty well to me. And so try and do that with other people. So we're almost at the finish line. I can see him waving the checkered flag. Okay. So final thought, Thaddeus. Anything, a golden nugget, something you know from your life experience that you view as, man, this is just a golden nugget and that you want to share with our audience today.
I got it for you. Look at what, here's the thing, two things. Most of us are wrong about most things most of the time. And with that, I would offer this. Look at what the masses are doing and do the opposite, and the vast majority of time, you'll be in a beautiful space where there's amazing opportunities.
I love that. If the herd is going this way, please be certain you're going the other way. That's where all the opportunities will be. And so, love that. Well, it's been my deep pleasure to have you on the show today. Remember, folks, two complimentary tickets.
Oh, that's right. Yep, that's right. First two people that messaged me after this.
Two complimentary tickets. Don't delay. Call today.
So, I guess maybe I'll leave with this. If I can squeeze one more in there.
Yeah.
Information. This is what I always tell a lot of people I'm trying to excel at business. Information does not equal implementation. You can have the best information in the world, but it doesn't mean you're going to implement it. But what does drive behavior, the single biggest predictor of behavior, is environment. So surrounding yourself with the right playmates and the right playgrounds, that will turn information into implementation. That's one of the reasons why I selfishly, we have the Guardians Retreat every year, is because of that. So I can surround myself with the right playmates and the right playgrounds and reorganize my brain for the next 6-12 months and develop amazing relationships. And the places you'll go. It really is that opportunity and that oyster opportunity.
It's two steps, folks. It's learn and act. Learn and act. Thaddeus, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Don. I look forward to reading your book, and I look forward to who those two people are. And thank you so much. I look forward to doing this again.
Thanks, brother. That's today's episode of the Proven Entrepreneur Show. See you next time. Thanks.
That's today's episode of The Proven Entrepreneur. Go to provenentrepreneurshow.com, subscribe to the show, leave an iTunes review, and you could win a $25,000 VIP day in Dallas with Don himself. And get Don's easier and faster selling with video course free. Please join Don on the next episode of The Proven Entrepreneur.